That's how it goes.
United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
That's how it goes. Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
That's how it goes. Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Jane Madnair. And if you've listened to this show for any period of time, you know that we are big stands of any organization that is doing pro-democracy work, especially work that is crossing party lines, because, you know, we also believe in country over party.
Yes.
Over here.
Yes, we do.
And so we're so excited for our next guest to be in studio, all the way from New Berlin, made it into the Waukesha area, from Voters First Wisconsin, which has a mission to fix our broken political system by ending corruption and incentivizing problem solving, Richard Eng, who is the founder, chair, and CEO of Voters First Wisconsin, and Lena Eng, who is a co-founder and board member. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having Kristen.
Yeah.
So besides the mission that I just read, how do you describe in layman's terms what Voters First Wisconsin is doing?
Yeah, in layman terms, I'm very simply, we just want to bring Americans back together again.
Easy.
Particularly in a swing state like Wisconsin. Much more in common than we have apart, you know?
Absolutely. And so what does that look like as far as all the different things you can do as an organization? How do you approach that?
You know, when we first started, we knew nothing about politics.
Really?
I was a passive voter. That was about it. And so we actually had a pretty big learning curve. And so when we first started, we thought, let's attend the state conventions for both the Republicans and the Democrats.
Okay.
To see what they're like.
And what year was this?
That was 2019?
Yeah, okay.
I think it was 19.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was an off year.
Okay.
And it was so enlightening.
Can you say more?
I will just say that everyone was really friendly, you know.
On both sides.
And the Democrats were very clear that they wanted to hear from everybody. So it was really interesting because they had breakout rooms for every type of demographic that you can imagine. And so that was really interesting. So, and then the Republicans was pretty simple.
Straightforward.
It was pretty straightforward, you know. It felt very top down. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
And so then go ahead.
I think it is pretty nice. She's a passive voter, but I hated politics. Did not like it at all.
Wow. Okay.
I spent 3 decades at GE Healthcare. You know, politics never came up in how we did things, right? Global company. So then jumping into it and just seeing how we have all this headbutting unnecessarily was a big shock and surprise to me.
So what was so from being a passive voter and someone who hated politics, what was the, like, what was the point that we were like, we have to do something? What was I'm trying to think of what the word is, but the Rubicon moment.
Yeah, you know, for me, it was looking and just seeing this growing tension. And then finally, I think, you know, Lena got tired of me yelling at the TV and said, you should do something about it. And, you know, remembering the words of my late father, he said, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So be a part of the solution. I'm like, okay, I better get off my butt and do something about it. That's why we decided to launch Voters First.
So that's really interesting to me because I feel like, you know, I had a similar in 2016. I read the news and I cared, but I wasn't involved. And then 2016 happened. And I would say I was first very much more drawn to like Democratic campaigns and arguments. And like, I think I got not necessarily more moderate, but more on this side. It took me a couple years to get to, there's a better way to do this, that it's not just one side pitted against the other, that in general there's more like pro-democracy things that we should be focused on, but I didn't start there. So why do you think that it was immediately, instead of being drawn to one party or another as two people who are joining politics, for lack of a better term, that it immediately became apparent that, oh, the whole system is broken? Like, how did you get there first?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat from experience about how, you know, we work in business, and just seeing, look, we're stronger together. You got to do things, and just yelling at other people and blaming them isn't going to work, right? That's just not how the world of business functions. So, you know, we kind of have maybe a right-leaning bent, if you will, growing up as conservative evangelicals. And, you know, our faith kind of says, look, we want to, you know, spread out more and be more welcoming, be work together, you know, following Jesus' example. And so that was kind of the tenor and the tone of what we wanted to approach this problem with.
Got it.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I was thinking, why can't our legislators work together? And my first thought was, well, if we want them to work together, we need to be able at the grassroots level to work together. Mm-hmm. And kind of a bottom-up approach also. So that's when, you know, we started to realize that this is, it's also a heart issue too, because we were starting to see the contempt that was happening in politics. And when you have so much contempt, that really breaks down a lot of things. If you think about all the lack of faith in some of these institutions mm-hmm. that we used to have. So we realized this is going to require a lot more attention and energy. And we felt like, yeah, we needed to at least try and do what we could to make a difference.
Absolutely. So we're talking to Richard and Lena Eng, who are the co-founders of Voters First Wisconsin. And so what does the work look like for you guys?
Yeah, so the work is really right now our big focus is on advocating for Final Five voting.
Great.
And yeah, so kind of a long-term journey. It's not going to happen in a quarter, but we have a, you know, very strategic mindset about what we're trying to do. And big thing is it has to be bipartisan. Mm-hmm. Like the long-lasting solutions have to be with, you know, Republicans and Democrats seeing eye to eye. The fact that this can help address the problem and really free up politicians as well as represent the voice of more voters. And that's something that we think is exciting and worth putting our time into.
So for people who are unfamiliar, we've talked about it before on the show, but we always have new listeners. And so could you explain what Final Five voting is?
Yeah.
Sure. So Final Five voting is basically, the goal is to change incentives. So right now in our current duopoly and our political industrial complex, they're very content with the status quo mm-hmm. because who benefits is, you know, the political parties, you know, even the media, you know, because they get lots of advertising dollars when there's a lot of, you know,
Wisconsin media companies are doing fine.
That's right, exactly. So, you know, and we appreciate the media. Don't get us wrong about that. But I think there is a better way. I think you mentioned earlier that if you just make yourself not as bad as the other party, you can win elections. We can do better than that in America. So how we change elections will hopefully change the incentives. And so Rich can explain the two simple changes that we want to make.
Yeah, with Final Five voting, really two key changes. First one happens in our primary elections, which for Wisconsinites is in August. And all we're doing there is just trying to expand the primary. So make it a nonpartisan primary where everybody gets to compete and the top five vote getters get to advance into the general election. So in the general election in November, Wisconsin voters would get to not just pick one person, they would get to rank up to five people if they want. And so they can rank in the order of their preference who they want to win for whatever office they're voting for. And what we're advocating for is only for the two U.S. Senate and the eight congressional offices at this point.
And that's what the current, because there has been bills in our state legislature that have gotten a hearing. Has anything been voted on yet?
Correct. So the two bills that had been introduced last term were SB 250 and AB 244 did have a public hearing in the Senate last term. Did not get voted on yet.
Okay.
And so the plan is to reintroduce them sometime this session.
And so why start with the federal elections instead of the state elections?
So the reasoning for starting with the federal election is we want to help Wisconsinites get acclimated to this, feel comfortable for this, and it's easier for the state legislature to work with the federal elections because it doesn't affect them. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible.
So they're not putting themselves out of a job?
Yeah. But we want them to see the positives as well, right? Mm-hmm. So make it as low risk as possible, show with them the benefit, you know, and even in states like Alaska where they have something very similar, Final Four voting there, we're starting to see people come out and say, hey, this is actually quite freeing for us as politicians.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you mentioned about putting themselves out for a job, I actually think that the goal is not really to change who gets elected. It's really to change the incentives on how they campaign and how they govern. And so, so we want everyone and even the politicians who are voting on this to understand the goal is just to free you up to do a better job of representing your electorate.
And that's really interesting. I would love, because we're coming up against a break, but I would love to hear more about the conversations you've had with elected officials on this. And if it's a fear of change, because that's what I think. It's like, it feels like everything I know about Final Five voting is things would get less ugly because if you're not going to be someone's first favorite, you want to be their second.
Correct.
And so it changes how you specifically campaign. But I'd love to hear more about how officials have thought about this, but also how you think it changes how they govern. Because I always think about it from the campaign standpoint. So when we come back, Richard Eng and Lena Eng will still be here. And they are from Voters First Wisconsin. If you have any questions about this, shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Waking for the CIA, they wouldn't have you in the bye-bye.
As Goes Wisconsin, I'm Kristen Bry, along with Jane Matt-Nair, and we are talking to Richard and Lena Eng from Voters First Wisconsin, talking specifically about one of their key initiatives, which is Final Five voting, which we've talked about in the show before, but talking about what it would take to get it in Wisconsin. There has been bills introduced, have not been voted on, hopefully get a little bit more momentum this time around. But one of the things we talked about before the break was the idea of Final Five voting and how it changes, certainly can change campaigns and how candidates would campaign. But Lena, one of the things you said is that it could also change how they govern. How do you see Final Five changing how people actually govern once they're elected?
Right. So with Final Five voting, the big change is where the competition is. Mm-hmm. So right now in many districts, the primary election is really where determines a winner because our districts are either so Democrat or so Republican. And so then the general election is when most people vote is not super competitive. Mm-hmm. What this would do is change the dynamics of the competition because now the incumbent has to govern in a way that they're going to win the general election when most people are voting. And there's going to be four viable candidates with maybe differing positions. And so it's a little bit healthier competition. But if they do a good job, they should still do well.
We have a text.
The incentive is because you switch the election that matters from the primary to the general, you have to appeal to a much broader electorate. And that electorate, they want problems solved.
Yeah.
And so because they want problem solved, you're naturally incentivized as the incumbent to want to solve those problems. So you're going to be governing in a way that says, look, I got to get big things solved. And most of us know that the big things require bipartisan work to be done. And that is one of the beauty of Final Five. It extends that bipartisanship to actually do work and get problems solved.
We have a text from Michael from Eagle, Wisconsin. I am all for ranked choice voting. Why the top five? How did you come up with that number?
Oh, he couldn't hear you. So the question is, why five? Why five versus three versus four? Like, what is the magical number of five?
Yeah, five is great question. You know, Alaska, they use four. We chose five because, you know, seven, more than that would be too much. Most people can't really rank more than that, and fully evaluate all the candidates. Five, and if you go to the grocery store, you look at, you know, different cereals. You can kind of pick five different cereals that your kids like and rank them. So it's easy cognitively to kind of manage that load.
Got it. So I guess, as we've mentioned Alaska a couple times, that was the big news last year. There was a special election, and then they voted again, and I think it was very big news because Sarah Palin was part of that, and she has name recognition. But as far as coming out of the special election and then again, because the same Democrat won in the November again. And so as far as takeaways from such a national story, do you think that was a boon or an obstacle, like created an obstacle as far as people's knowledge and awareness of this type of voting, and also people saying, oh, this could work, or like, I like this. And so how do you feel, like, was that a win or a neutral?
I thought it was a great win.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at some of the exit poll data, 85% of Alaskan voters found it to be simple or very simple in order to manage that. So, you know, that's a concern as we do voter education here. So seeing that happen in real life. And then hearing, some of the candidates who came out of that, Lisa Murkowski, she won the U.S. Senate seat.
Mm-hmm.
She had a great interview the other day on PBS about just how it helps her govern well. And when you look at, you know, the Democrat winner, Nancy Peltola, she's really kind of a different candidate, right? She was pro-gun, she was pro-choice, and she's like pro-fishing, right? And like, that doesn't fit neatly into our quote-unquote duopoly, but that's what Alaskans want.
Yeah.
She was a great representative. And then you had the hardcore, you know, Trumpist Republican governor, he won.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, it doesn't benefit any party, it benefits what the electorate wants.
Absolutely. So beyond Final Five voting, what are some of the other key initiatives that Voters First Wisconsin would love to see?
Yeah, well, we were involved in the redistricting.
Okay.
Fight for nonpartisan redistricting. And, you know, even though that didn't go as well as we wanted, it was a great initiative. I think that if we can get Final Five voting passed, I think that will come later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And come after even this potential, you know, looming lawsuit that's going to happen, probably get filed in
three weeks. Right. Yeah. I think Final Five voting allows our legislators to be able to make better decisions together and problem solve these areas. And we also are involved in reducing the influence of money in politics. I think that's something that it doesn't matter whether you're red or blue. I think people are just disgusted with the amount of money, you know, that's being funneled into politics that could actually be used to go.
I think the final count was $56 million for the Supreme Court race.
It was just got awful high. Jeez.
All right. Well, we only have a couple minutes left. So how can people get involved or get in touch with you guys if they're interested in your mission?
Well, they can head over to votersfirstwi.org. That's our website. And if they love the concept of Final Five voting, we'd love for them to fill out our postcard campaign, which you can find the link there, and that shows their support. Our volunteers will handwrite a letter on their behalf to their representative. They just tell us the words, we'll write it by hand, and we'll get the word out to their representative and hopefully make some change.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was super informative. And it's, like I said, we are big stands of anyone who is trying to be pro-democracy and cross party lines and get people to come together, because I am an optimist and a little bit of a Pollyanna, at least for now. So thank you so much, Richard and Lena, for coming in today.
Thanks for having us, Kristen.
Thanks, Kristen.
All right. When we come back, Democratic candidate for the 3rd Congressional District, Rebecca Cook, will be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope you like me, getting to know you.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Mattenair. And it's been a while since we talked to a candidate.
I know.
We talked to lots of candidates last fall.
Had to break out the ukulele.
And had a whole range of songs that you got to play. And we're already back.
We're back into it.
We're back talking to candidates. And our first candidate to talk to for the 2024 election is Rebecca Cook, who announced 2 weeks ago that she is going to challenge Derek Van Orden in the 3rd Congressional District. And we're so excited to talk to you. How are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling super good. The energy is great on this show already.
we bring a lot of energy. Yeah. Or try to, even when pregnant. So I guess for people who, because this show airs, I mean, now we actually, because last fall we were in part of the 3rd Congressional District. I think Wisconsin Rapids was in there. But now we have a station in La Crosse, we have a station in Eau Claire, and so we are certainly in your neck of the woods now. So I guess for people who don't know you, what should they know about you? Yeah, who are you, Rebecca Cook?
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm a dairy farmer's daughter. I grew up over here in the Eau Claire area on a registered Holstein farm. So this is kind of fair season. I've been out already hitting the Chippewa County Fair, was in at the La Crosse County Fair this last week as well, connecting with folks. So so showing cattle was a huge part of my background growing up. And I have done a number of things, but, ran a small business in Eau Claire for the last 7 years in our downtown, and also run a nonprofit that supports women entrepreneurs throughout 10 counties in West Central Wisconsin. And I'm currently waitressing, which actually a lot of people don't know,
which is
really fun. It's a newer restaurant in Eau Claire called The Good Wives. They were actually one of the recipients of the Red Letter Grant. And so kind of full circle working with them. But and then additionally, I run an Airbnb business over in Menominee where we do some pop-up restaurants. So yeah, I'm looking at Jane's face. I have my hands on a lot of different things and have thrown my hat in the ring and stepping up to run for U.S. Congress and finishing what we started last cycle. And I just feel like there's a lot of folks in I don't think there are a lot of small business owning waitress Holstein dairy champions representing us in DC, but I do feel like that very much is the fabric of West Central Wisconsin. So I'm excited to shake things up and try to get some things done.
Absolutely. So as you said, as you mentioned, you did run in 2022, and I should know this off the top of my head, but you got second right after Brad Paffin for the primary. So tell us more about what you learned in the 2022 campaign. And kind of what you're taking into next year with this campaign from learnings of doing that.
For sure. Yeah. So last cycle, I won 11 out of 19 counties. So the vast number of counties and population centers like Eau Claire, as well as Stevens Point, but especially like rural counties. And I think my personal narrative and story has really connected across party lines and with rural voters, just what my background is growing up on a dairy farm and just some of my work experiences and lived-in experiences, right? And so I think I was vastly underestimated in the primary last cycle. I was outspent by most folks in the primary. So I know how to make a dollar stretch, but I also know I feel like really how to organize people. And so we had a broad coalition of support, what we're kind of calling this time the Cook Coalition. love some alliteration there. And so, you know, like from labor unions, small business owners, farmers, teachers, students, we had a lot of different folks that were organizing on our behalf. It's a huge district. It's 19 counties geographically. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of ground to cover. So yeah. We really worked a lot with empowering volunteers to become county captains. And so I think it's building on some of that momentum from last cycle and continuing to expand that. So,
and so how would you, not that we want to make it about your opponent, but as far, I will say, considering who it seemed like he is and was, he being Derek Van Orden, and he hasn't made tons of waves since getting elected. Like, I think he's kind of tried to stay under the, it seems like, to the layperson who is seeing what news rolls in, what headlines get made, he has seemed less of the Marjorie Taylor Greene Freedom Caucus type and more of a little bit more moderate in the what is representative for your third congressional district. Jane has something to say.
Just in my opinion, it seems like once he got elected, he dialed back the loon.
Yeah, the way Jane said it. And so I guess in living in the district and obviously you have done a lot of research into this, into what he's done or has not done so far, like, what grade would you give him, or like, where do you see him as like what he's been able to do or hasn't done since in this, you know, first year and a half?
Sure. You know, I think it's accurate to say that he's really dialed back the tone that he had when he was running for office for sure. But you have to remember that he's an author and an actor, and congressman is kind of just another feather in his hat. And so what do actors do best, and that they play a part? Right. And because there hasn't been anybody pushing him, we haven't seen as much for him to react to. Right. You know, and he's not from this district. I feel like people still don't really know who he is. You know, he moved into this district kind of seeking that limelight. And so, you know, I think that it's getting in early, like I've done, to be able to kind of hold his feet to the fire and to start to dig into some of the things that he's been doing in Congress, you know, and holding him accountable. I think he's definitely hustling, but hustling for the Republican Party leadership, for Kevin McCarthy, who invested a lot in his race. Right. And so there's some dues to pay. But not really for working families. And so, you know, I don't see him much out in the district. I don't hear about him a ton out in the district. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of see how things unfold on the trail and how we go head to head.
Yeah, absolutely. And how is the 3rd Congressional District doing? What are, you know, as you're starting to talk to people, because it seems like ever since, because you kind of made it clear almost as soon as he won that this was in your future. If I remember correctly, as far as like, as soon as that race was done, it wasn't.
I sent a tweet out.
Yeah, exactly. And so you obviously have been keeping stock of like how the people in this district are doing and what the issues are. And so what has felt like the things that matter most since the 2022 election? Has it changed since the 2022 election, or is it still the same kind of economic kitchen table issues?
I think it is a lot of the same things. I mean, I think we're still dealing with the rising cost of everyday goods. You know, being a waitress, I'm really connected, I feel like, to my colleagues, my coworkers, right? You know, who are struggling to find affordable housing in the district, you know, working to still pay off student loans. I think one of the top issues that I'm running on in particular this time is just healthcare and, you know, expansion of healthcare, of Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing. My parents get their dental work done in Mexico because it's cheaper for them to do there than it is here. So it's like the very things that as we grow older deteriorate, why, you know, shouldn't they be covered under Medicare, right? Yeah. And then thinking about, you know, my coworkers at the restaurant, many of them don't have health insurance. And I myself am on the exchange and have catastrophic health insurance. So, you know, it doesn't cover much. And so what are we doing to make the Affordable Care Act work for people? You know, and lowering premiums and making just the process of getting access to insurance easier, right? And so it's a lot of the same issues, right? And I think from last cycle as well, obviously during the campaign, Roe v. Wade was overturned. So I'm hearing from a lot of people just having their reproductive freedoms restored is still top of mind for everybody, not just women, not just for young women, but for a lot of different people. And so this district has 6 college campuses and universities in it. And so we saw a lot of people come out for Judge Janet, in particular, I think around, you know, issues like that. And I think that we'll see a lot of younger people empowered and emboldened to turn out this cycle as well.
Our guest is Rebecca Cook. She is running as a Democratic candidate for the 3rd Congressional District. Spot, Rebecca, I'm really curious about women's reproductive health. What have the men that you've talked to said about it?
Yeah, I think that they're, this is something that I feel like folks have taken for granted for some time. And I think that there are men, particularly in this district too, that want to be allies, that don't want women's freedoms limited. Right. And so, I've been to a few different things. Some of the things Sarah Godlewski organized in the district, like Rally for Our Rights in the spring. And, it wasn't just a bunch of women there. There was men there too, that just feel like this is something that's stifling women's freedoms and, want to turn out for their partners, for their daughters. And, you know, I think recognize the need for this, those rights to be restored.
And how much are people also understanding, like, because I feel like whenever we look at a map or talk about the lack of maternal health care, it's a lot of times it's your district, right? It is a lack of doctors and like how far people have to travel to get, you know, what the care. I have a doctor's appointment this afternoon, right? Like I'm at the point of my pregnancy.
I was at the OBGYN this morning.
Right? And so. It's like I have to go every 2 weeks right now. And I'm trying to think for people who are pregnant in your district who have to travel how far every 2 weeks once they get to their 3rd trimester. And so has that come up at all?
Yeah, I think there's a definite need just for rural access to healthcare in general, you know, and you see a lot of doctors that are splitting time between, you know, more population centers like in Eau Claire that are spending 2 to 3 days out of their week going to smaller healthcare systems because there's such a difficulty in recruiting healthcare providers. And also you're seeing kind of an exodus from burnout with the pandemic of healthcare providers in general. So looking at how we can incentivize people to be offering those services in smaller communities and what kind of pipeline programs that we're building to incentivize people to want to become nurses and healthcare providers and not leave the field, right? I think that's super important. And, you know, I toured a few different smaller rural clinics. We did a 19-county district tour last cycle. And so I had an opportunity to talk to with some of those providers on what recruitment looks like. And, you know, a lot of those are FQHCs. So they're federally, a lot of them are federally funded. And so being able to just understand that and the role that I could play in helping to bolster those clinics and making sure they have the resources to really deliver what their patients need.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we have a couple minutes left. And so one of the things we always did with candidates last fall that we're bringing back is our speed round. Okay. So.
Okay.
So we have
it's all about cheese, Rebecca. No,
yeah, it's
I'm
mostly
kidding.
About cheese. So, you know, first thing that pops in your head, obviously it's all about you, but just.
Oh, it's about me?
It's about you. Yeah. So it's, so we'll just power through these. So your first job.
Waitress, Mike's Smokehouse in Eau Claire.
Boom. Person you would most like to meet.
I would love to meet Paul Wellstone, though he is no longer with us, is very much somebody I admire.
Okay. Something about you that people that might surprise people.
Something would be that I've been junior champion of the Chippewa Fair.
Nice. most recent movie or TV show you'd recommend?
Ooh, I'm watching Hijack right now. That's on Apple TV. Very interesting. Very good show.
Okay, I haven't heard of that one.
I haven't either.
Yeah, it's like TV new. So.
Okay, perfect. Favorite thing about your district?
I would say the natural beauty. It's just gorgeous. I feel like it's like a very kept secret a little bit of being one of the jewels of Wisconsin.
Absolutely. What's your walk-up song?
Dolly Parton, 9 to 5, which I feel like is everybody's apparently, but I loved it because I felt like it embodied just being a hard worker, being a working class candidate, but it's so overused. And I'm like, God, I gotta find another one. You know, everybody's like, this is played out. So I'm trying to, you know.
Dig up another. Another maybe a less known Dolly song.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll get to work on that.
I was
going to
say, Jane's pretty good at finding music. She might be able to help you find something.
This is my thing. We'll find you something.
All right. And then the last one is, what's still on your Wisconsin bucket list?
I have never been to Door County, which is like a travesty. I know. And I was like, maybe I could go this summer. But then we launched this campaign. So maybe we'll try to get over there a little bit at some point. But I've never been. So,
you know, to be fair, to your credit, one, it's far. It's obviously on the other, opposite side of the state. But also, I feel like there is a similar quaintness to the towns across, up and down the Mississippi River that is very Door County-esque.
Yes.
But not as touristy yet. And so there is like a similar vibe that, like, you know, again, you can get it in your home district. Yeah. But yeah, I would say yes, you should go. That is that is surprising. Well, there you go. All right. Well, you had a kickoff event yesterday. Went well?
Yes. It went awesome. Yeah. So we are doing these series of cookouts, C-O-O-K-E. So playing again off my last name. But it was great to just kind of gather people in real life to connect. I mean, we did this digital launch a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, I really feel like people want something to kind of grab onto.
Absolutely. So. Well, we'll probably have you on again because it's still a year away before that primary happens. So Rebecca Cook is running for the 3rd congressional seat as a Democratic candidate. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. It was great to see you guys.
Great to see you too. All right, we have one more break. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Haven't you noticed? Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you. But I gotta think twice. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And I'm guessing you didn't see Barbie over the weekend?
I did not see Barbie over the weekend.
Did you see Oppenheimer over the weekend?
I did not. I don't like it when it's so crowded. I'll wait a couple weeks, but I do want to see both of them in the theater.
I think I'm going to see both this week. I think we're seeing Oppenheimer on Thursday, and I'm going with girlfriends on Saturday to see Barbie.
Oh, that's perfect.
And I'm very excited.
Will you wear pink?
I don't own a lot of pink.
Hot pink, it's back.
I do. That's not true. I have one hot pink blazer that I could wear. So I'll be like CEO Barbie.
CEO Barbie.
There we go.
That's great.
But holy moly.
Yeah. Wowza, Greta Gerwig.
The hype was real for both, I would say. And, you know, as the joke I saw this morning was like, can memes translate to ticket sales? And apparently they can, because Barbie and Oppenheimer gave North American movie theaters the best weekend since Avengers Endgame opened.
Wow.
4 years ago.
Wow.
So both movies totally dismantled expectations and put up historic numbers. Greta Gerwig's Barbie pulled in $155 million.
That's the best for a female director ever, isn't it?
Ever. I think probably before that, I'm guessing it was Wonder Woman.
Ah.
With, God, who was the director of that? And the first Wonder Woman was really good. The second Wonder Woman was.
I saw the first one. It was great.
1984 was not as good. And then Oppenheimer was $80.5 million, which for a R-rated movie.
And a that real is, heavy.
That is a historical drama that's 3 hours long.
Lots of chuckles in Oppenheimer, I heard. Oh, yeah.
The fact that I think the projections for that was $50 million. So it just smashed that. And I think Matt Miller is going to be here for our pop culture update on Friday. So I'm sure we're going to get more into this with him then. But it's, you know, it's fresh now. So I figured we'd talk about it. But it's interesting to think of how much the two ended up feeding each other. Like, I'd love to know if, like, the stats that come out of, like, how many people did actually do the double feature of seeing both versus how many people just saw one or the other. And I also, it's such an interesting time for this to have happened right as the strikes are happening.
It's funny that you say that, because I heard a comedian say over the weekend that what a great diabolical scheme by the movie studios to make sure that a large portion of the country is dying of heat stroke right now. Where can you go for 5 hours and stay cool? The movie theater.
Oh, well, I'm making a different point than I'm talking about the strikes of, like, these are two movies that, like, were not made by machines.
Right.
They were not written by AI.
No. Nope.
They were not. I mean, the Barbie set is a set.
It actually exists.
It's actually a set on a Warner Brothers lot that the set designer created everything that is in there and it is not reliant on computers to generate something and actors to work with a green screen.
No CGI.
And so the two movies that have now just dismantled what was before, you know, held by what a lot of, you know, I like Marvel movies, so this isn't my critique, but, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, these, you know, everything's now just a superhero movie,
right?
And like real movies with real scripts and blah, blah, blah. And these are two movies that are exactly that, with like invested actors, invested writers, invested directors, that are people who are of the craft of filmmaking and shown that it can be done, that really good movies,
even led by women,
can bust open movie and get people back to the movie theater.
Yeah.
And on top of that, right now, studio heads are like, no, but we don't want to pay you.
Unreasonable expectations, Kristen.
And so, yeah, so it's interesting as far as like, will there be any learnings from this from the side of studios? Because not all studios are here. Like A24, which basically gets nominated, like one of their movies, it's a small independent studio that, you know, for the last X amount of years always has something that is nominated for an Oscar because it's always kind of gritty. They've come to terms with the actors. And so those are not, that is not a struck company.
Oh, wow.
And so there is company, there are certain studios and smaller studios that are, it's not all versus just versus the actors in WGA. And yet, this is going to, I don't think this is going away anytime soon. So if you're looking for a way to support the actors, and a reminder, 85% of SAG cannot afford health insurance because they make less than $27,000 a year,
which is nuts.
So the actors that are striking are not
85%.
Yes. The actors who are striking are not the people who are making millions of dollars. Like the actors who are striking are like what I used to be. Like I was part of SAG, and it's like you maybe got 3 guest stars in a year. You got a commercial here. Like you got some work, but it wasn't consistent.
And you couldn't live on it.
And a lot of people cannot live on it. And so it is trying to bolster the people who this is their life. This is their living. And yes, like the people who are at the top make so much money, and there's probably an argument to be said that they also could take a pay cut along with the CEOs of these studios, but at least they're standing with them. At least they're supporting them. But I will say, if you would like to, where did I get that information that I'm going to share with you? If you were wondering how you can help the ongoing writer's strike, the best thing you can do is donate to the Entertainment Community Fund, which I'll link to today's show notes. And that supports affected workers. And you don't necessarily have to. This is not a consumer strike yet. Like people aren't asked, the actors and the writers are not asking you to cancel your streaming services or anything. But if you do want to support them by donating to that fund, that's probably the best thing you can do right now.
That sounds good.
Any update on the UPS strike? That seems like around the corner, too.
That is around the corner, and it doesn't look like anybody's budging on that, so.
Summer of strikes!
Yes, it will be.
Summer of strikes. All right. Well, thank you to our guests today, Richard and Lena Eng and Rebecca Cook. Thank you to everyone who called in and texted in, especially in that first hour. We had a great conversation around who you would vote for. If you missed any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. We'll come back tomorrow and we'll do it all over again. This has been As Goes Wisconsin. I gotta have faith.